Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Want an easy way to stay up to date with the latest news and trends in the NBA? Listen to the NBA Daily Ding podcast Monday through Friday. Wake up and turn up the NBA Daily Ding to stay informed on all things NBA here at The Athletic and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on The Athletic Podcast Network. Welcome to tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
Sam Panic.
To be able to bring people together. What do you do, baby? Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
Try all you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Everybody, we don't know how to tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I am Sam Amick, coming to you on location from the NBA Finals in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, overlooking the Milwaukee River on a quiet Monday morning. The Bucks last night made this thing a series, guys. I'm here as always with Fred Katz, Anthony Slater. The Bucks now down 2-1, 120-100, game three win. Giannis Antetokounmpo, as our David Aldridge had wrote last night so well, as always, is doing special stuff, 40-plus point performances in consecutive finals games. On today's pod, we're also going to talk Team USA a little bit. Mr. Slater is kind of, you know, having a hybrid of his Warriors hat with the Team USA coverage, you know, when he's taking a break from Suns coverage on the finals. And then, Mr. Katz, you've got a coaching search going on with the Wizards that who knows, might intersect with that other topic as well. So we'll get into all that. But, guys, I'm here in Milwaukee. Last night was crazy. I'll be honest, I've been in Milwaukee plenty of times over the years, but pretty intermittently. You know, West Coast-based writer. During my Kings beat writing days, of course, it would be a one-trip-a-year type thing. I looked it up last night. The last time I was here was 2019 in the middle of December. It was cold. It was, you know, somewhat miserable. And the fan element was certainly not what it was when you host a finals game for the first time in 47 years. So, and this is what I wrote about last night. I mean, we're talking fireworks after the game. We're talking chaos, fans everywhere. This place is partying like they're Vegas. I'm not kidding. Like I'm losing sleep because you go to bed.
I don't know, Sam. I was in Vegas for the McGregor fight this weekend and concerts all over the city. I'm not yet ready. I know Milwaukee's getting up, but you should have seen Vegas this week.
Fair enough. But you know what Vegas doesn't have? It does not have a river cutting through the middle of downtown and booze boats. It's great because during the day, like right now, it's very innocent and very, you know, holistic, where you have kayaks with fathers and sons and mothers and daughters, you know, going down the river. At night, you have these boats where people are just drinking like crazy, pumping music until 2 o'clock in the morning. The hotel I'm at.
Only two is not beating Vegas.
Well, thankfully, and hopefully it's not coming through on the podcast. Thankfully, I have an air conditioning unit that is so loud that it drowns out some of the partying. But yeah, man, the scene was insane. And it was fun. I mean, you guys know the routine. We don't root in these series. We root for good stories. We want to have something to get into. So, you know, we joke in the media and we're a little bit jaded where it's like, let's go Suns. You can sweep so I can get home and be sleeping in my own bed again. But we want good stories. And to see the Bucks fans in this city be on fire in the best of ways because of that win and them having hope again was admittedly a lot of fun to watch.
Is this what the Bucks do now? I mean,
are they the new Clippers?
They fell down 2-0. They came back down, not just down 2-0 to the Nets, right? I mean, they lost by a million and seven in game two. We were talking on this podcast a couple weeks ago about coaching changes that were potentially coming and
who would
and that wasn't just falling down. That wasn't just falling down 2-0. It was the way they fell down 2-0. Like, we were speaking passively aggressively as if we were offended by having to go through that viewing experience, you know? And now they fall down 2-0. They come back home and they have this you know, really well-played performance in Milwaukee. Maybe the Bucks have out-clippered the Clippers.
The Kyrie ankle twist changed that series. You know, Phoenix hasn't had something like that. You know, they did lay a dud. I mean, this is very much a series, obviously. But I do think injury shifted that net series from where I think it was headed. But, yeah, Giannis... You mentioned Giannis in your lead-in. I did a lot of, you know, I looked at the regular season before the series and how he had so much success. He scored 80 points in two regular season games, and a lot of it was, the Suns put Ayton on him, but because you almost have to play a center-sized guy on him or else he'll power through. But he killed Ayton in those two regular season games. He was kind of speeding by him. They were using some screen stuff where Ayton was just kind of lost because he's not used to guarding that type of player. And the question coming into the series, I know me, Sam, and I had it. We all had it. Was like, first, like, is Giannis even playing in these first couple games? He ends up playing. And I think increasingly over those first two games, even though they lost both, you're like, okay, Giannis is like really looking like himself. And now they had two days off before this last game. They have 2 days off before this next game. At this point, you just got to expect, like, Giannis is the top level 100% Giannis, despite that scary knee injury. Right. And if that's so, I think the regular season even taught us he kind of kills DeAndre Ayton, and Phoenix doesn't really have a defensive answer. They don't even have the defensive answers that like Miami did in the past, where they built a better wall with like waves of wings. I think Mikal Bridges is too thin and has to guard Chris Middleton anyway. So Giannis is really getting going against this Phoenix team. And you know, I don't think that maybe fully swings the series to Milwaukee, but it's a problem that I don't know that the Suns can solve.
Yeah, and I mean, look, Ayton in game three comes out and he has the five fouls. He has to play limited minutes. I think he finished at 24. And it wasn't just Ayton's foul trouble that hurts them. I mean, Dario Saric is out right now for them after he hurt his knee. And they were worse in the Kaminsky minutes than they would have been had they had Saric out there. I think they struggled without him. I think his absence was felt. And, you know, that's not the same thing as Kyrie getting hurt, but that's something that... that matters. I mean, look, Giannis was able to really just his ability to get to the paint and finish there was outstanding. Like, it was unbelievable. He was 13 for 13 in the restricted area. Like, he was getting there and he was finishing and he was doing it in a bevy of ways. They played him at center a lot. And Slater, you mentioned that with the way they used him as a screener. Part of that was because they were playing him as the biggest guy on the floor for them. He was able to get there off the ball. He was getting there early in the shot clock and they were finding him with incredible post positioning. And when Giannis is 1 foot from the rim, I don't care who's guarding him. He is going to score a lot. 13 for 13 in the restricted area is with 17 free throws on top of it is ridiculous. Say,
and by the way, speaking of magic number 13, 13 of 17 from the line. What? Which 13 of 17 from the line. And that's with a handful of Suns fans like having a smattering of, you know, 1, 2, 3. There was actually counting on the home floor. But
Sam,
yeah, I mean,
Sam was counting on press row too.
Me and the Bucks fans were trying to grow past that, Slater. Don't bring that up again. It's a sore subject. I'm still getting comments every time I write about their team. Speaking of which, as a quick aside, I didn't help myself at all. My approval rating with the Bucks Nation is not great. I write a piece trying to at least capture some of the joy that they felt last night and just completely drop. I'm just going to own this. I completely dropped the ball when it comes to having some sort of hat tip to the beer culture around here. And in my late night kind of absent-mindedness, dropped an Anheuser-Busch reference in
which
Milwaukee.
Which is St. Louis, even I know that.
So shout out to Milwaukee native Rob Peterson, our esteemed NBA editor, who hits me up and says, hey, brother, you mind if I change that to Miller? Because you kind of missed the mark here. So Rob had my back, and we might have had an edit there. But yeah, I was not counting on Giannis's free throws. But let's go down the Giannis road a little bit, because, you know, we could work around the edges, and there's a lot to talk about there. Jrue Holiday, you know, doing a fantastic job against Chris Paul, finding his offense a little bit. Chris Middleton doing just enough, you know, hitting big shots. You know, Cam Johnson's dunk, not going to be forgotten, but not being the turnaround moment that it seemed like it might have been when it happened. But with Giannis, it is really something to see, not just in a vacuum, but because of the injury that he had suffered. This, you know, and it's one thing if it's media hype where a guy gets hurt and we talk about how, oh, he could have been out longer, this or that. We have already heard from the man himself that he went to bed the night of the injury, I think June 29th, thinking that he was out for a year and thinking that this was, you know, the deduction there is that it would have been a torn ACL. And now he's out here, you know, talking to Associated Press's Brian Mahoney and answering a question about how Michael Jordan had 40 plus, sorry for the noise there, boys, 40 plus four games.
Straight. Four straight.
I said 40. That's because Jovan Buha is texting me and it was very distracting. 44 straight 40 plus games. And you know, Giannis was quick to say, I am not Michael Jordan. I'm not Michael Jordan. But if you're ever having to say you're not Michael, you're still doing something right.
Yeah. I mean, he was on the ground, not with just him believing that he potentially tore his ACL. I think the entire world did. Did any of us watch that and like, you know, that seems like a weaker. That seems like he'll probably be back in about 6 days. I mean, he clutched at it. Like, that was scary. Yeah. And he's currently the, you know, best player in the series. You know, I think Chris Paul's obviously had moments. Devin Booker was good in the first two. What did he go? 3 of 14. But Giannis is the story of the series. He's the guy that, to me, Phoenix has, I think, the deeper, fuller team. I still think they're the favorite. They have the home court. But the way Giannis is playing, as determined as he looks, as unguardable as he seems to be from the Phoenix side, he is the player of the series right now. And that's crazy, considering that I thought he might miss next season. And it sounds like he did, too.
Doesn't it also, and Fred weigh in here, doesn't it also, I feel like we got to add a little context in terms of the Giannis conversation and, you know, the idea, and fill in the gap here for me. Why am I forgetting who dropped the, you know, what kind of national pundit dropped the Scottie Pippen reference a while back? Was it Richard Jefferson?
I think Steven Jackson has said some things. You know,
Perk has said that too. Perk has been calling him Robin and Middleton. I think
RJ, and I'll do a little fact check, make sure I'm not putting something on him that he didn't say. I'm pretty sure RJ did. And it's, you know, just that general question and that concept of, you know, two-time MVP, is this guy worthy of, you know, the way that his career had been framed? And when you go out and you do things like this that do not happen all that often, it certainly seems to answer that question.
Yeah. I mean, the crazy part for me is that we all thought that he was done at that moment when that knee turned in that ridiculously disgusting direction. And it's not just that he's dominated for two games, because he was unbelievable in game two also. I mean, he was incredible. They did not lose that game because of him. He was amazing in game two. And it's not just that he's dominated. It's that he's physically dominating. He hasn't randomly caught, you know, fire by Giannis standards and hit three threes in a game or something like that. He's overpowering guys. He is just out physicaling a physical team.
And he's making up words. He's so excited.
I know. It's true. It's true. It's just incredible. It's incredible to see after his knee turned that way like 2 weeks ago that he's able to do this in the NBA Finals against a really good physical team.
For the record, it was Richard. Again, he wasn't wrong, but he had dropped the Pippen reference talking about Giannis.
Yeah, I haven't liked, there's been times in this playoffs, I think we all haven't liked how he was playing or how Milwaukee was playing. I mean, you think about the Nets series, he took 8 threes in one game. He took 6 in another. Remember the legendary play where Harden's in the post on him and somebody's coming over to double and Harden's like, nah, I'm good. And then he shoots the fadeaway and bricks it. I think that was like one of the lowlights of one of those losses. And Kevin, you know,
Man, Slater, show a little respect for Harden's post defense. We know what he does down there.
Yeah, you ain't lying. But remember, he shot the post fade and it was like, go through Harden. Why are you trying to show off the 17-footer?
He really does. He's like, I don't know what the good analogy is, man, but like to see him always fighting the temptation to kind of play with these little basketball toys that he has that really should not be played with is something. It's in a lot of times it's in big moments where, you know, he had one last night. I think in the first half, he rimmed out a three, and it is what it is, you know, but he still is doing that every once in a while.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you think about the net series that I'm mentioning, like, I think we all agree. We watched that series and went, well, you know, Giannis is Giannis, but Kevin Durant is a different level of superstar.
Yeah.
And you know, I still think today we probably all believe that, but you know, if they win this title, right? Yeah.
Slater, like, I mean, Durant, we're saying that in any generation, we're putting him on the floor, you know, with Michael saying, damn, Mike's amazing, but Kevin had a night, you know, like that's how good Kevin is on certain nights. And so, I mean, you're right. And you could also, I mean, you were the one on this pod going into the series talking about matchup wise, how Giannis had dominated so much against the Suns, and that is bared out. I mean, especially once he started getting a little bit healthy, you know, he seems to have his way with this group.
Yeah, the burst is back. He trusts his knee again, and you know, that's when he has the speed, that's where he's can get by Ayton. And if he can get by Ayton with the speed, he can overpower anybody else on the roster.
I remember a few years ago when Shaq was on TNT, they were talking about which current day player reminds Shaq the most of himself. And Shaq said Giannis, and everyone's reaction to that was like, what the hell are you talking about? That's crazy. Giannis is a perimeter player. But I get why he said Giannis. Giannis has this ability to be able to say more than maybe any other player in the league. Embiid is in this category. It might just be him and Embiid at the top of the league when you talk about this, where he can just say, you know what? I'm going to go there. And that's where I'm going to shoot from. And I'm going to do it purely on overpowering whoever the hell is in front of me. And he has this kind of evolution of Shaq's sort of way, the perimeter version of being able to do that, where if you put you can put Ayton on him, he's going to outquick Ayton. But he's also capable of overpowering a center too.
I wonder, like, okay, so go back to Slater's Harden moment. And Giannis has already won two MVPs. He's in the finals. He's doing historic things. But, I mean, do you see – is there any chance with his game, like, that he still could add more back to the basket stuff? Because that's the part, obviously, where the Shaq comparison falls flat. Giannis is always trying to find a way around you, especially now that the knee is healthy. You're seeing the Euro step again. That's how he's getting around Ayton. But it is wild that he's as great as he is, yet you still can't throw the ball to him on the block.
So I think the thing with Giannis, people talk about how he needs a jump shot or he needs a post game or whatever. If I could add one particular type of shot to his game, it would be a really good floater. That's what I would want, because then
Kareem
all
style,
of a sudden,
man, do a little Kareem style.
Well, just when he's on the perimeter and he's
Sam
going at the basket
right now,
you know, we hear him
sweeping hook shots in the lane.
I'm in Milwaukee. Exactly. I'm feeling the local fair. Come on, this is Kareem country.
We hear so much about the vaunted wall that teams try to put up against Giannis, that defenses try to use against him. But like, he'll try to Euro step through that. He'll end up getting caught and throwing up, flailing up these you know, bad looks that end up missing at times. Or maybe he'll end up settling for jumpers in those moments. But like, if he's able to combat that with something at the just in the floater range, the 5 to 10 feet away on penetrating it, it's going to make the Euro step so much easier to get to the basket. It's going to make him able to get to the basket so much easier, because now that's one more thing the defense has to look out for when he's driving to the hoop. So I would add a floater for him before I'd add any of that other stuff.
Well, I mean, I could see that shot particularly working against the Blake Griffins of the world. I mean, remember the success that Blake was having where he was laying way back and he was just like staying about 7 feet from the rim and just kind of bodying Giannis every time he got there. And yeah, if Giannis could just go to 9 feet out, Blake Griffin's still going to stay a little bit back and you just, you know, kind of drop that floater.
Rashawn Holmes style. Rashawn Holmes.
Yeah, there we go. I was waiting for
Kings.
The Sacramento reference. There we go.
Pay that man this summer. Pay that man.
I mean, if he could also add a Robin Lopez hook shot, I mean, you know, no. Anybody?
We're doing like the Transformers thing with Giannis. Like, what could we add to make him even better?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
It is. So guys, you know how it is when you're at the series, when you're there on the road, like you enjoy not only what's inside the arena, but seeing the fan experience. I already knew that Giannis was popular in this town, but to see it on this stage is just insane. Like, you cannot. Last night, walking around with good buddy Jeff Zilgit from USA Today, Jeff said, man, he goes, I think about 7 out of every 10 Bucks jerseys are Giannis jerseys. And I was like, brother, like, your math is a little off. Like, it's 9.5. You know, the Giannis jerseys are everywhere. I saw a Bledsoe jersey the other day, by the way. That was great, considering the Suns tie-in and the fact that he played for both teams. But there are, you know, I walk into my hotel first day I get here. There's a chalk painting, or, you know, a chalk rendition of Giannis on the sidewalk. Just randomly somebody decided to do a portrayal of Giannis on the sidewalk. There's paintings inside every bar. And the one we were in last night with Vinny Goodwill from Yahoo Sports and Jeff and I, like, he is omnipresent. And it got me thinking back to last summer and the fact that he made that choice to sign the Supermax. And the irony is, you know, I wrote the other day about how he certainly doesn't love the fame, doesn't love the spotlight. And there's people with the Bucks who think that, you know, the kind of the off the grid nature of this city is something that actually helped them in that situation. Because while he's wildly famous here, you know, that spotlight doesn't reach as far as it would if he was in a New York or an LA or a Chicago. So, you know, yeah, man, like, just seeing, he just owns this town. And we always root for the small market stories, and Fred off air a minute ago, I forget when he said it, but, like, you know, Kevin Durant leaving OKC, that left a mark on that place. So I was walking around last night going, you know, man, I'm happy for the Milwaukee folks that he stuck around, because they enjoy the heck out of this dude.
How was the crowd compared to Phoenix, Sam? Because I was in Phoenix, and I mean, that place was about as jumping as it could be.
It was very, very good. It was very, very loud. It's not as aggro, if I'm being honest. I'm just gonna lean into it. I'm deciding which fan base, you know, and you can go ahead and at me, Suns fans, but like, Suns fans are a little much. The vast majority of them are passionate, incredible, having fun. I don't know if it's the heat. I don't know if it's the Suns in four guy that kind of channeled some of the worst parts of who we are. But man, they're a lot. I mean, we left game two to share a quick story, and it was similar where, okay, home team wins. And I left the arena, and it was with our Bucks beat writer, Eric Name. And we're sitting there, and Melissa Rowland from Fox Sports trying to get a lift out of town. And folks are everywhere celebrating, but it's just like, you don't have to be so damn aggressive. That's, I don't know, again, what the root of it is, but there was kids.
I think the heat might have something to do
with
it.
I'm serious.
I mean, it's just, you get delirious in that one time.
I'm serious. Like, I was telling the woman in my lobby here at Milwaukee, we were having this conversation, and here's the contrast. In Milwaukee, they were, you know, they're always miserable in the winter. Now they're going around like, what? I'm sorry, 70 degrees? This is amazing. I love everybody, Suns fans included. You know, it's just a little bit of a different vibe. We come out of that Suns game, and there's like 5 or 6 teenagers running around on skateboards, flying up and down the road, screaming at the top of their lungs, Suns in effing four. And they're pointing at you. Like, they're pointing at grown folks, screaming, Suns in F and four. And I kind of joked with our crew, like if I say Suns in five, are you going to come fight me? Like, what are we doing
Sam
here?
Sam Amick almost got into a fight with Bart Simpson in Phoenix. That's what we're learning.
That is the perfect characterization. Bart was for sure flying around screaming Suns in F and four. My favorite part was one of the dudes, his skateboard hits the curb. He almost bites it. And he barely catches himself. His buddies are still, and I'll be honest, the father in me was watching this going, oh, good Lord, if my son was ever one of these kids, like, I would not be happy. But his board hits the curb. He goes flying, catches himself. And my thought is, oh, you better catch up with your buds, your friends. And instead, he turns to the car that is stopped at the stoplight and decides he just needs to let one more Suns in four rip. And this, like, makes it very personal, points at the person in the car, and it's Suns in F and four, you know. So, yeah, the move.
Sam is going after a second fan base in this series. So
who else would I go after?
Him. Well, you were the Anheuser-Busch Milwaukee fans.
Oh, yeah, I know. This is when I get out of my circle. I need to spend more time around these teams.
No, just wait till the Bucks fans catch wind of the Bud Light reference in your story. You'll see what really happens.
My NPS is going down very quickly. That's an all athletic right. reference.
What else in this series? I mean, what did you guys see with Booker? And you know, Paul too, but Paul's had, I think, 10 turnovers the last couple of games.
I think
Drew Holiday obviously into it.
I'm gonna make a quick executive decision later if you guys are okay with that. I feel like we the finals, we're going into game four, we know where it's at. I'm kind of curious to pivot real quick and go down the Team USA / Warriors / Wizards road, because there's a lot of stuff going on outside of the finals, even though the spotlight is on this series. Team USA has been doing their thing in Vegas, and I
know they have not been doing their thing in Vegas.
Sam. That is very fair. By their thing, I mean losing to a program that had two wins in the history of its existence in Nigeria. So that's what I meant by doing their thing. Talk to me, Slater.
I stumbled into the Shocker, Sports Shocker of the weekend the other day. I was actually at that game. They played defense super lazy. It was the first exhibition game. I think they had practiced, Popovich said, three or four times before, whereas Mike Brown, who's coaching Nigeria, very big moment for Mike Brown. He had had Nigeria's, team at a camp 3 weeks ago. I mean, they were clearly the sharper, more motivated team. This was a huge, national stage test for them. They came out really physical. Gabe Vincent from, he played for the Heat, hit six threes. Nigeria hit 20 threes in 40 minutes, which shows you kind of how Team USA was playing defense. It was like not really getting over screens, floating around. It almost seemed like all-star game level energy at times defensively by a bunch of all-stars. But still, I mean, it's a shocking result against a Nigerian team that has seven other players are NBA, but none of them average more than 6 points. I think Josh Okogie, I think, might have been the leading scorer. It's they can still go on and win the Olympics. I still think they're heavy favorites, but if you care about international basketball, it was an ominous opening for a team.
We got two quick roads to go down here, but we got to give a shout out and some credit just due to the one and only Mike Brown. And that's right up your alley, Slater. I mean, Mike, experienced head coach, had some highs, had some lows, and a guy who obviously has been putting in good work with the Warriors for quite some time now. I remember hearing that Mike had, planned on taking this Nigeria job and was super happy for him, did not anticipate this kind of a thing. I know it's just one game, but Mike really well. Were you able to glean any kind of substantive Mike Brown influence from watching this group play?
Yeah, for sure. And I would say that the media situation is a little bit more lax. Like, I was able to sit post game, they let us down and chat with him for a while. But, this means a lot to him. He looks around and, sees Argentina, Spain, Australia, these non-US teams that over the years have become really legitimate on the international stage. And his point to that is because they have a program where you get guys who are, from their teenage years, late teens into their 20s, like they always play together every summer in international competition. And he has taken this Nigerian job with the expectation of trying to build a program over the next decade, really, including they apparently have like the fifth best player in the country from the age of 16 is Nigerian. And he was at their camp. He's not on this current team. He can't really play at that age. But he's already starting to kind of, you know, get the younger talent. And I mean, there's so much talent across the league that has Nigerian roots, including, you know, Giannis himself. So he's starting to build a legitimacy. And if you're talking about just game, I mean, he coached a very good game. You know, the offense was sharp. The defense was physical. He was, you know, demanding ball pressure, kind of knowing that Team USA, I don't think, wanted to necessarily play a super physical up-tempo game to start. He even had Kevin Durant was rimming, like his free throw was about to rim in, and one of the centers went up and batted it off the cylinder because you can do that in international play. And then he fouled, you know, they were trying to hold on to the lead late, and he did the twice. He had his team foul up three, and it never gave Lillard or Levine or Durant a chance to shoot a game winning three. So like, he really, you know, he outcoached Greg Popovich and Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr, who is his boss currently.
Pop's one of his mentors.
Win. Yeah. It was a very good moment because, you know, we talk about the legitimacy in Nigeria trying to, you know, stake claim to that stage a little bit. That was huge. I mean, they were trending on Twitter. I mean, I know that's like such a modern thing to say, but like, that's important.
Fred, correct me if I'm wrong. Is the one and only Bradley Beal part of this program?
Well, you wouldn't know from watching that Nigeria game.
Ouch. Hopefully Brad's not listening. But okay, so Brad's on this team, and we all know that Brad is somebody who we incessantly and relentlessly talk about as the next superstar to be on the move, even though Brad tells everybody who will listen that he doesn't want to be on the move. But inevitably, when it comes to the national program, you know, this is where superstar pairings get made. So is Tommy Shepherd a little nervous during this time when Brad's out there hanging with a bunch of dudes who would love to bring him to town?
The Wizards will never say at all in any capacity that they are nervous about it. But if I were the Wizards, yeah, I'd be nervous about it. All of these super team origin teams stories start off with Team USA, it feels like.
Right. You know,
the LeBron, Bosh, Wade stuff, 2008, Team USA. You know, it feels like that. Sean Hyken from Bleacher Report asked Beal at an availability last week about if there were going to be recruiting pitches and that kind of stuff over at Team USA. And Brad said, I don't know. Probably, yeah.
Well, I'm envisioning we got Brad at one part of the table. We got Damian Lillard at the other. You know, there's a competition to get the invite to that dinner because you can only have so many folks on the reservation. But yeah, I mean, you know, I mean,
Draymond Green will be on that reservation.
Yeah. Draymond Green, if he's not, is just showing up. If he doesn't get on the reservation, he will go to the restaurant, apply for a job as the maitre d', and then make sure that he's seating them.
It is wild. Yeah. And I think the folks who listen to our pod are probably very well versed in the history here because they're big time basketball fans. But like, whether it's, you know, I think Andre Iguodala kind of pairing up with Kevin Durant early on, Kevin routinely cited that as the first time that he started thinking about that group. You see it even go the other direction. You know, I was happy for Ime Udoka getting the job in Boston, and that had a Team USA ripple effect where he was on the staff that would work with some of the guys who were with the Celtics and establish a rapport, establish a comfort level. And eventually they just decide they want to work together. So it matters a lot. And, you know, I mean, we're having fun with it here, but I think it is real. So Slater, I mean, what do you think might come of this time?
I mean, we'll see, but it's, you know, they're spending the next month together in a situation where there's, you know, particularly when they get to Tokyo, it's a pretty confined, you know, there's not going to be fans in the arena. I hear you're not really going to be able to leave the hotel much. So, I mean, I assume it's going to be a bunch of just like team meals together in their own bubble where, you know, conversation after conversation. I walked into the arena the other night and it's like Steve Kerr is warming up Jason Tatum. Jay Wright is warming up Bradley Beal. Lloyd Pierce is warming up Bam Adebayo. And, you know, they're sitting there having conversations. And, you know, just from a perspective covering the Warriors, I'm like, wow, this is kind of interesting. Steve Kerr's like sitting there, like, you know, going through some drills with Jason Tatum, like, and he's going to be doing that for the next month. And, you know, I did an interview with Steve that'll be coming out later in the week. It's not too deep on like Team USA stuff, but you know, you chat with him a little bit about the players, and you know, he's suddenly gaining fuller appreciation for players, and you know, you might, that could be flip side too. You know, if they're working with Steve or Greg Popovich, not that anyone's going to necessarily demand to go to San Antonio right now, but that it's just a fact of the last couple decades that what you guys are talking about. I mean, relationships are formed here. I mean, the DeAndre Jordan, Kyrie one. You can even go back to Iguodala and Curry at the World Cup back in whatever year I think it was, which a lot is in a lot of ways credited Durant for starting to think about the Warriors. So Draymond Green is not running away from that either. I mean, like he will be vocal, I'm sure, about that.
Fred, the part that also matters here, though, to swing it back to DC, is the Wizards coaching search and like Bradley Beal's actual current life, you know, as a member of the Wizards. So let's break that down. Last I checked, how many are we down to now? Four?
It seems like it's three, with Jamal Mosley taking the Orlando job and
okay, I didn't Ronald deduce Norrett the one. You're right. Yep.
Indiana. So it sounds like the ones at least that we know it out, they've kept stuff very, very close to the vest. I'm pretty sure it's only down to three. It's Wes Unseld Jr. and Charles Lee and Darvin Ham. Wes Unseld Jr. is with Denver, an assistant there, and then Lee and Ham are both with the Bucks, which I'm sure has been an extremely hectic process for both those guys coaching a team to the finals. And also, like, Hammett got two interviews with Boston too. So I'm sure it's been crazy hectic with those guys too.
I know we texted about it the other day. I ran into Darvin Ham in Phoenix at the Bucks hotel. I don't know Charles Lee, but I'm going to give our guy Eric Name a little love here. Charles passed a table the other day where Eric and I were sitting, and I got to give Eric credit, because Charles Lee respects Eric Name's basketball game. He was giving him love, saying, man, we got to hit the court again. I remember, like, so Charles Lee actually thinks Name can hoop. And if you know Name at all, he will tell you that he can hoop. So he's not bashful.
I was at this table as well, Fred. I don't get a reference.
Sorry. I got one cup of coffee, Miss Slater. I'm trying to remember every detail. So yes, Slater was there when now I'm going to put Name out there. Slater was there when Name legitimately said that in transition, that he on trail threes, that he has quote unlimited range, and he was not afraid to share that.
He did. That is something that was said.
But yeah, like, so Charles Lee, Darvin Ham, and who am I leaving out? Who's the third one?
Wes Unseld Jr.
Thank you. I mean, Wes,
who is the name?
Yeah, Wes with the history. Wes with the work that he's done in Denver with you know, his favorite agent Michael Malone, always there to lift him up, which I've respected. You know, Darvin's got a lot of history with Tommy Shepard. You know, we text. They've had a lot of folks through there, right? Like, I hit you the other day about Suns assistant Kevin Young, who interviewed in the last round and didn't advance, but seemed to do a good job. Michael Scotto of Hoopshype had reported that, but you think Wes is the name? You think Darvin's the name? You think Charles? What do you think happens next?
If I had to guess, I would guess it's either Darvin or Wes. I've heard support for both of those guys. I think there's a lot of respect for Wes, because not only is, I mean, look, you win the press conference if you hire Wes Unseld Jr. That's the win the press conference pick. Not to demean his coaching abilities, which are clearly very well respected, but his father is the greatest player, or was the greatest player in the franchise's history.
You have to do more. It's okay to do that. You have to do more, though. And I think the point you're making is that's part of it. But but that's not all of it by any means.
Can I?
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Can I ask something?
Yeah.
All these names seem like, you know, they could become really good head coaches, but they do seem kind of more like rebuilding hires. Like you get a young guy in and you start, it's the start of a program. And that to me, that makes a bigger question of, you know, Westbrook and Beal, particularly Beal, does the priority of the organization turn to maybe looking at trading him and getting a package that's picks, that's young players, that's a core to bring in for a young coach and go like, this is us moving forward. We're taking the long-term approach instead of, you know, if you were necessarily trying to appease a Westbrook and a Beal, you might bring in a big name vet coach that's like going for the sixth seed next season. You tell me, but that's just the read I have from the outside.
No, that's a legit question. I've wondered if with this list of coaching candidates, because it's not just the three finalists, every single, and maybe there's someone they interviewed we don't know about, but we know about double digit number of candidates that are out there that had at least one interview. And every single one of them has combined for 0 days of NBA head coaching experience. They're all guys who have no experience coaching in the NBA at all. And so, yeah, I wonder, even as the Wizards continue to insist, head coaching experience, yes. I wonder, even as the Wizards continue to insist, there's no way we're trading Bradley Beal. They're going to build around him. He is the guy for the future. They're going to offer him the four-year extension they can offer him in October. If not, they're going to re-sign him in free agency. That's the plan. They do not want to trade him. Not only do they not want to trade him, they don't even want to engage on trade talks. I wonder that if, as they continue to insist on that, if they're not telling themselves a little bit with this list of candidates. Look, part of it has to do with money. I don't think they have the budget to where they're going to go out and sign Rick Carlisle. They're not shelling out that kind of money. And maybe those two things go hand in hand, you know? But yeah, I mean, look, if you're in every other way, they say we're trying to win next season. They want to be as good as they possibly can next season. And sometimes you can hire an assistant coach and that assistant coach can be awesome right off the bat. And some of these guys who they're looking at, they're experienced assistant coaches. I mean, Darvin Ham has been, this isn't a Steve Nash sort of thing where he really didn't have very much, you know, he's a former player, but he didn't have very much coaching experience. I mean, Darvin Ham was a head coach in the G League. He's been in player development with the Lakers. He's been an assistant under Bud for years. He was an assistant under him in Atlanta. He's been an assistant under him in Milwaukee. He's had basically every hat you can have outside of the front office inside an organization, except for a head coach. I mean, he's been a player. He's cut film. He's been a head coach in the G League. So there's just the experience for someone like him, the experience for someone like Wes Unseld Jr., who's been an advanced scout and worked in a front office, been an assistant coach for a long time and worked his way up and has been working for an NBA organization since he started with the Wizards, like almost 25 years ago. They're bringing in experienced assistants. You know, Ronald Norris is the one exception. He's 31 years old, but he ends up going to Indiana anyway. So I think they're looking at it in that sense. And maybe that's, you know, for lack of a better expression, maybe that's splitting the baby. But I do wonder if, I wonder if they're telling on themselves a little bit, because even if the plan is to keep Beal, like they still could find themselves in a rebuild next year if they find out they have to trade him at the deadline, or if, you know, this thing goes disastrously, they think they're going to re-sign him, and then he leaves for elsewhere for nothing next, you know, next summer.
Do you have any pulse of, you know, I know Brad's away with Team USA, but any pulse of how Brad is feeling about this process?
It's hard to tell. They've been saying that they're involving him. So I think he's been relatively involved in the process, but that said, I definitely don't think it's we're going to hire whoever Brad wants sort of thing. Like, it's Slater, definitely not that.
Slater, do you think Draymond is just sitting at dinner, just destroying Darvin Ham and Charles Lee? And
he's just going through their resume.
I don't think he would actually do that, but
he's going through their resumes on Wikipedia as Bradley Beal's eating at, you know, whatever, John George's Steakhouse or something next to him, going, wow, no head coaching experience here. That's interesting. Well, you know, Steve Kerr's three titles, I think, you know, that's interesting. Anyway.
And Charles Lee is up for another job too. I mean, Charles Lee can end up in New Orleans, right?
Yeah.
And that's a possibility also. That's the other open job. And it sounds like they really like him. So he could end up going there. And from what I hear about his personality, I feel like he could work there. He's like this very...
He must be a nice guy. He's giving compliments to Eric Name.
Well, he's got this rep of being... I did a piece last week where I spoke to people who have worked very closely with all the candidates who are finalists for the Wizards job. And the thing that everyone says about Charles Lee, the first thing, is that he's like the most gregarious, most outgoing person in the room in any given moment.
Sure, sure. Gentlemen, good stuff. I'm going to end with this. First of all, Fred, you had the honor of working very closely with DA and continued to do so in a somewhat adjusted capacity. But I've worked with David a long time. He rolls into town for game three. My favorite, I didn't even tell him that I happened to observe this, so I'm just sharing it on the pod, which is okay. DA's on press row, and, you know, he's locked in on the game. He ends up writing a really good column. The thing that cracked me up was I happened to glance over his shoulder at his screen on his laptop. The man solves New York Times crossword puzzles during NBA Finals games. There's something about that I loved. It was like, man, that's a good headspace to be in. You're kind of like, you're finding your peace within all the basketball chaos. And so it was good to see DA. And then to tie a kind of a bow on my lack of Milwaukee local knowledge, in my defense, I just noticed this right now. I glance out the window across the Milwaukee River, and I see staring in front of me, again, somehow I didn't notice this, maybe it was subconscious, a gigantic Budweiser sign.
Wow.
So maybe Anheuser-Busch just creeped into my head, and that was why I messed it up.
It's got to say presented by Sam Amick before game four.
Right. Budweiser, what does it say? Arts performing. It's a very old sign. So that's my only out here. Guys, good stuff. Fred, I promise we'll go a few weeks without asking you if Brad's getting traded. Slater, good luck in your continued job of having 17 different beats to cover. And appreciate you guys. Talk to you next week.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.